Support this show and all of the work in the Heartland Pod universe by going to heartlandpod.com and clicking the Patreon link to sign up. Membership starts at $1 per month and goes up from there with extra shows and special access at the higher levels. Heartlandpod.com, click the Patreon link, or just go to Patreon and search for the Heartland Pod. No matter the level you choose, your membership helps us create these independent shows as we work together to change the conversation. Hello and welcome back to the Heartland Pod. Again, my name is Adam Summer. I am your host. This is the regular Monday show, our Talkin' Politics show, with myself and my regular co-hosts, Rachel Parker and Sean Diller, who will join us in a moment. I'm a lawyer. Rachel's a writer. Sean works in politics. That's where we're coming from with our show produced right here in Missouri, where we take a look at politics. Together, we bring big topics of the week with a special focus on the Heartland as we bring our middle-out approach to politics and work to change the conversation. We'll bring you shows 5 days a week, including Fridays. We have the Flyover View, which is a nice recap with Kevin Smith as the host. We have the Delta that rotates with High Country with Sean Diller. So the Delta with Christine and Nicholas Linke comes out every other Wednesday, and High Country with Sean Diller. And of course, now our newest show, Dirt Road Democrat, hosted by the one and only Jess Piper, which will be a Thursday show. And we're hoping to have that every week. Might not be every week, but we're going to try to have it for you every single week if we can. You can support what we do by leaving a rating and review on the podcast app of your choice. So wherever you're listening to this, if you're not streaming it directly on your browser, if you're on an app, you can always find a place to give it a rating and write a review. Please share reviews. We're getting some new reviews in, and so I'm going to put some of those together and we'll read some of them on an episode. So, you know, give us some reviews, make something funny. I don't know, make it entertaining. Maybe yours will be one that I choose to share, but it really does help. So tap the 5 stars and leave a review for other folks. You can also follow us on all your preferred social media with @TheHeartlandPod. And there's some handles for Rachel and Sean and I in the show notes if you want to follow us personally. And we really appreciate all the support. We've got some new folks over on Patreon, and we love it. We love seeing it. It is very helpful. All of our shows are independent. This is all, you know, we finance it from whatever we get from our patrons, and then whatever the difference is comes out of pocket. So that's how we make these shows. So it's very, very helpful for us when you sign up at Patreon, and you can do that over at heartlandpod.com. Click the link for Patreon to sign up and join us.
Talking Politics.
All right, we are here for Talking Politics. We've got the whole gang. It's Adam Summer, Rachel Parker, and Sean Diller. And I think we've got a heck of a slate tonight, and we're not gonna waste too much time because, I mean, it's just good stuff. But let's go around the horn here. I had a pretty normal week, had some trial this week, which is always fun. I've spent the last 48 hours solo parenting with 2 puppies in the house. They're not both ours. Don't worry, we're not insane. So for that reason, I'm sipping on my puppy sitting gift, which is a Hibiki Centauri whiskey. It's a Japanese whiskey and it's fantastic. So makes the puppies go down smooth. So Sean Diller, man, how you doing? How was the week? What you sipping on?
Doing well. Thanks. Yeah, the week was good. Today Michelle was working at the hospital, so I had both girls, all day Sunday. It was pretty a little harrowing, you know. I started this weekend really great. I was in like full DIY weekend warrior mode in a way I haven't been like ever. So like Michelle got, so we built this house new a few years ago, which means we like checkboxed, you know, a couple of options and you know, gave them every dollar we had to move into someplace in Colorado. And all the light fixtures are just like the cheapest possible builder's grade, you know, like they all look the same and they all cost like $1. So Michelle's big Christmas gift this year was she got a couple gift certificates from family for West Elm. So she's like, hey, could you replace this, like, you know, fixture at the top, like this 20-foot high, like kind of hanging down chandelier sort of fixture? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I could do that. So she orders the damn thing, you know, and so now it's like we're into it financially.
I can see where this is going because you've already called it the damn thing. So,
well, that was so it worked out beautifully. And I ordered or I rented a 12-foot high scaffold from Home Depot. I was looking at it and I'm like, even if I get a 20-foot ladder, it's going to be too dangerous, like trying to do this. So like built this 12-foot scaffold without like cursing or like breaking. It's like there's this glass like bookcase right next to where I was working. I was just waiting for that to like shatter as I like break everything. Yeah, got it done last night. It looks amazing. Took the whole scaffold down. It took like over an hour, you know, to put it up and take it down. And so that was a huge success. But then today I pushed it too hard. It's like I should have been more cautious and known that like things come back around. The girls were napping and I was using a razor blade to scrape some duct tape off of a whiteboard.
Well, I don't like where this is going. I'm just going to say this right now.
And I just sliced it into my finger deeper than, you know, deeper than any other time I've done it. Couldn't even stop the bleeding. And because the girls were running wild, I let Callie like go get a Band-Aid for something non-existent. And then, I couldn't find the Band-Aids. Like I was bleeding. I was bleeding really bad. And the girls were asleep and Michelle was at work and I pushed it too hard. But we're okay.
I mean, who amongst us, right?
Yeah.
Me.
That sounds a little bit like that time that we had like a flood in the basement. It's a whole other story involved with this lawsuit, blah, blah. Anyway. And we got I found some scrap fabric or some scrap carpet that was like left behind by the piece of shit developers that I'm suing anyway. And so I cut it's like this weird shaped corner. And I was like, let's just cut pieces of carpet together and like cover this area of the floor that's concrete now. And like, I can't believe that we still have our fingers. Like there were a couple of like slips of the straight razor where I was like, are you okay? That's kind of great that I didn't really like make contact with your thumb, honey. He's just looking at me like, why did I marry you?
And that, of course, is Rachel Parker.
Hi, yeah. DIY stories. Who knew? Yeah. We have so many.
Well, let's jump into these. Let's jump into these topics here.
True or false?
All right. The true or false is Katie Porter running for Senate is a big damn deal. That's the topic. I think it's true for many reasons, but. Why are we talking about Katie Porter, California representative running for Senate for 2024 in California? Well, because she's from Iowa, y'all. So, hey, how about that? Big come up for Iowa. And, you know, if you love Katie Porter, everybody loves her whiteboards, right? It's a ton of fun. She's very smart. She says a lot of smart things. You know, if you take the names away and you just look at the words and the rhetoric, you see a lot of crossover. The Venn diagram of the Katie Porter, Lucas Kuntz messaging is going to have a ton of similarities to it. So pretty good clue as to what you're going to hear from a lot of Democrats, I think, for 2024, especially on the broader cycle. So, Rachel, why don't you kick us off here with Katie Porter running for Senate.
So excited. Okay. Yeah. So Katie Porter flipped a district in Irvine. And for those of you who have forgotten how California works,
right,
there is Los Angeles and the Bay Area and everyone else is a Republican. That's how it works. So Orange County is Reagan country and Nixon country. And, it's always been conservative. So she, during one of the most critical House elections in the history of this country, flipped a seat from pretty hard red to, I don't know if it's official. She's held onto it since then. And when she won this last cycle, and there was one person in the field in 2018 who unsuccessfully tried to unseat Dianne Feinstein. And the more I've learned about him and his candidacy, the less said about him, the better. Honestly, he sounds like a real piece of work. Anyway, so when Katie Porter was has been a rising star in the House, so much so that like Maxine Waters elbowed her off of the Finance Committee, and she is exactly what everybody says the Democratic Party should be. She is also, by the way, a former student of Elizabeth Warren. She has absolutely been mentored by Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren told her to run for the House of Representatives. And when she won her seat, retained that district in 2020. I was like, please, dear God, don't let anyone get in her way. And please let her run for the United States Senate.
Yeah.
The U.S. Senate or the California, California's had two female senators, had two female senators for a very long time until Kamala Harris, of course, became notably the first black woman to become the president, the vice president of the United States.
Right.
And Padilla was nominated by Governor Newsom to take her spot. And so I want that seat to be retained by a woman. And I really think it's time for 89-year-old senile as fuck, God bless her, Dianne Feinstein to step aside. And I hope nobody gets in Katie Porter's way. It'll be interesting, but I'm super, if it's not obvious, I am super excited that she is going to go forward with this. I think it's fantastic news. I couldn't be happier for her. I could be happier for California. And I think it's just, she's also relatively young. So she would, I think, be the, like, amongst the youngest female senators, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe that's true. And, so that's all, that's it. That's what I got to say. I love her.
So you would say true, big deal.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know that I would say that it's a. I don't know that I'm like. I don't think it's a surprise. Like, I think she was definitely like on the short list of people that was expected probably to, take a run at this. But yeah, sure, true. Yeah, it's a big deal. It's wonderful. I'm super excited. Obviously.
So Sean, one thing I noticed putting the sheet together and doing some background is that Fox News is already headhunting with Katie Porter. They are after her. All kinds of claims about how she's this, you know, just monster of a person and a racist, and how, you know, the lamestream media is just ignoring all of these things. You know, what do you see from a politics standpoint for Katie Porter? You know, is this something that you think is manageable, and the true false, do you think it's a big deal for her to be running?
Yeah. So I think it's true that it's a big deal for her to be running, but not because of anything about her. Dianne Feinstein is 89 years old.
And it seems reasonable that 89 is old enough to get out of the Senate.
And let's be clear, like, Dianne Feinstein, we should clarify, Dianne Feinstein has not said that she's not running again.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And that's part of why
she's
it's a big
10
deal.
Years fucking older than Biden.
Right.
Like, there are rumors that, like, it just relies utterly on her staff because she's so, like, she acts like an 89-year-old, apparently. God,
it's a,
like,
good way to put it, that she's 10 years older than the guy that everybody's just like, he's too old.
Right. He's too old. Right.
Right. Right. And anyway, another thing that I read, and it does, you know, just with 89-year-olds, like, they said she is very, shaky on the details of things that are happening now, but, like, she recalls with perfect accuracy things that happened in, like, the 1960s.
To be fair, I can relate to that.
Right. Which is, you know, at least she can, you know, do that, which is, hopefully she does leave, basically. Hopefully it doesn't get worse.
Yeah.
I think she really embarrassed herself as, during the Amy Coney Barrett hearings. And so, but anyway, it's a big deal because she's a sitting senator. And so now it's all, you know, it's a big deal because a lot of other people will jump in as a result of Katie Porter jumping in. And, you know, just politically, when I think about, like, jumping into a primary against an incumbent, I would never hold that against someone. Because, you know, things happen. It's like you can hold someone accountable for the kind of campaign they run, but you get into a race because you might have a path, and, you know, things happen, especially when someone's 89 years old, but things can happen to anyone.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a reason to be on the ballot. Yeah. So I'm interested to see what, you know, the other names are Barbara Lee, who was the one member of Congress who voted against the war in Iraq.
That's a hell of a talking point.
Who's also from Southern California, I'd like to point out.
Right. Yeah. And her website, I don't know if she's, you know, it's not a for Senate website, it's her House website. But, you know, she's using more kind of democratic languages, community advocate sort of language. Katie Porter is talking about, you know, Big Pharma, Wall Street, and oil and gas companies, you know, sticking it to regular folks, which I think, you know, if she's pushing that message hard, that's good for the National Democrats. You know, we don't want, you know, this really loud, embarrassing, you know, chippy California primary for the next year and a half. I know that.
Right.
But you know, it'll be interesting to see who jumps in, and it's going to be a really secure seat in the U.S. Senate. You know, whoever wins it is probably going to be a U.S. senator for a really, really long time. So that's a big deal too. She also raised $26 million in her House race. So it is a big deal.
That's a lot of money.
That's so much money.
Yeah.
For a House seat.
She spent it all.
That's
she spent
so much money.
Or $28 million.
Wow.
So, you know, we're going to see some fireworks, I think.
I'd like to say
Rachel, top us off here and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I'd like to say a couple of other things about Dianne Feinstein. So it's when you live in California, it's really easy to hate on Dianne Feinstein because it's like hating on Nancy Pelosi. It's the low hanging fruit. There's things you can point to, like the fact that she wouldn't get out of the way and stuff like that.
Just the way that rolled off your tongue. I'd like to say a couple of other things about Dianne Feinstein.
Like, if I may. She was the
first
woman.
You can't see
this
on the show, but she's got a sheet. She's actually got a very old notebook that she's opened up and is just flipping through now.
Yeah, it's Dianne Feinstein.
Thoughts on Feinstein.
She was the first woman elected to the Senate from California. She came into the Senate at a time where you could literally, I think, count the number of women that were in the Senate on one hand. So I remember, like, that when Hillary was in, there was like a dais where everybody was like, the women of the Senate. There were like seven people,
right.
Christiane Amanpour, somebody like talking about like, it's really the women's time. And I was like, you know, there's 100 of you, right? Like, you're so you're seven and there's 93 of them. It was so pathetic. But so to get
the dude
to where
still
she
had
was,
an A minus at that point.
Yes, totally, exactly. They might have a straight A even. You know, she elbowed her way through politics, and she came up through the San Francisco political machine, which is just like Kamala Harris did.
Right.
Which is not an easy Yeah, it totally is. It's so and back then it was just even probably worse. But it is time for her to go, and I think she has a really, especially when it came down to her actions against George W. Bush and the Forever Wars, I think that she has a record that deserves a lot of commendation and compliments. I'm excited for the balance of power in California to shift a little bit south, because that is not where the tech companies are headquartered.
Right.
And when you talk about the movie studios, like, honestly, with the movie studios, mostly are unions. So, like, for working people, like, that's a good thing, because right. That's mostly what's in Southern California, as far as like the base is concerned, and more working class people and people of color in the South. So I think it's time that there were two senators from the southern half of the state. I think that'll be better for the country too. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, and it brings up an interesting topic that Sean made me think about. We'll save it. We're not going to get into it right now, but put a pin in this. The Obama Democrats message-wise and the populist Democrats message-wise, as you were talking about the differences between the two messages there. So,
all right,
let's move on here to the yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
All right, the yeah, no comes from right here in Olmo. There's a 0% chance that if you listen to the show, you have not heard about this story, so we're not breaking any news or getting in anything new necessarily. But there was a rule change in the Missouri House that made, I don't know, every national news outlet. Sean, this is the time to ask. Did Michelle get this one? Did it make it through?
No.
Oh,
no,
interesting.
Sorry.
I would have thought it might.
Yeah.
It was insane. It was on it was on NPR. It was on CNN. It was everywhere.
I mean, for it to truly break through, you know, it's like NPR and CNN don't count.
Sure. No, that's true. That's fair. I guess Missouri House to NPR and CNN is
right.
I will say it broke through. Like, not all the Missouri stuff breaks through to Elliot, who reads a lot of news. And so I feel like it breaks through when he's like, did the Missouri House tell women how to dress? I'm like, that to me is a breakthrough story.
Yeah.
Because it's like in the Washington Post or something.
Right. It was everywhere. It was on every single outlet. Had a story about it. It is, I mean, truly ridiculous bullshit. It's just the easiest way to sum it up. KC area rep Ashley Ani was on CNN and said some very good things. Rachel Prouty, however, absolutely lit them up, and I want to give a shout out to this video here. Let me make sure we can hear this, and I'm going to play this some of it.
I want you all to pay particular attention because there's going to be times on this floor where there are things that should not require debate and comment. I contend that these are one of these things. There are times to have your name said, to be recognized, to be called upon. This is
absolutely
one of
kills
things.
This.
There are some very serious things that are in this rule package that I think we should be debating, but instead we are fighting again for women's right to choose something, and this time is whether she, how she covers herself and the interpretation of someone who has no background in fashion. Because again, it is an, and this isn't a shot, it's inappropriate to wear sequins before 5 o'clock, telling me that I can't wear a crispy good St. John sweater if it has too many buttons.
Just,
$200 on a suit and I can't wear it in the people's house.
Just, I mean, come on. How do you not
she
just
dropped,
love every
and,
bit
like,
of that?
And she drops the St. John's knit reference, which if yes. anybody knows, St. John's knit is like the stretchy fabric for very wealthy women.
Yeah.
That's what that is. It's super just expensive.
You can't wear sequins before, you're not supposed to wear sequins before 5 o'clock. Just, I was like, well, this is really going somewhere. When she dropped it in, I was like, oh, that was just glorious. I mean, that's just, it's perfect. It's perfect. And then a couple of tweets. I want to shout out some people on the Twitter. Barb at Babs Bruno. She just gives this nice graphic, the 0 days without being a national embarrassment for Missouri graphic.
Right. Yeah. Start it over. Yeah. Reset the counter.
Yeah. Erase the board. And then this one from Tom at MGOTF. On Twitter, they literally didn't have to have this debate. They control everything and could have just moved on. The cell phones of this party are too many to count. Like, yeah, they could have just been like, here's the rules package. Passed. Moving on. Just, yeah, no.
But the issue is that they don't want women to wear bare, they don't want them to be bare arms.
Right, they wanted the debate.
Isn't that so, like, it's, and I feel like this is one of those things where
it was okay, so it was changing the rule about the dress code to say the same thing about women that it says about men, that you have to wear a suit jacket, that it has to be a suit jacket, therefore causing it to cover your arms. Before it would have been, there would have been more interpretation to it, whatever. It's kind of irrelevant because recall the debate about Mike Moon and his stupid overalls. Right, we've been down these paths. The bigger point to me is it was just another excuse to hijack debate for grievance, axe grinding type politics and cause a debate on something that's non-substantive, doesn't actually matter, and all it does is allow them to point to the folks on the left and say, oh, look, we're owning them, we've triggered them, they're just, you know, they're just so worked
and also
up about this,
probably cover up some of the other noxious shit that they're planning on doing.
Correct. As
and everybody take out. And everybody fucking takes the bait. Everybody, the national news took the, everybody takes the fucking bait every fucking yeah. time. Like,
that's why I wanted to stick this in here. Is like, it's a yeah. like, yes, it's a yeah, no, it's stupid. And I'm glad that some people got some shine that deserved that shine, actually, on it being one of those
100%.
People. But
100%.
How much time got spent on that versus, you know, actual work, actual governance?
I think it's like one of those, it's a tactic so people tune out. Yep. So that when they defund schools this time, or if they do manage to successfully eliminate a huge revenue stream from property taxes this session, whatever, or get rid of our ability to pass ballot initiatives, this is all distraction. It's all
Correct.
Distraction. It's, and it's very, they're very good at it. They've gotten very good at distraction politics. Should we call it that? Can we name it that now?
Distraction politics. I like that.
Can we take it away from grievance politics and call it distraction
politics? I like
distraction
politics.
Okay,
That's
great.
Good.
Thanks.
Sean? All right. Any last word on this particular one?
No, I just want to say I've been consistent that rules about what you wear on the House floor are stupid.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. Well, let's move on to the buy or sell here with some non-distraction politics. All right, the buy or sell. We don't, you know, a lot of times what we talk about is purely political. But this has bubbled up, and I really think this is a good topic because it's a good example of when the kind of political messaging and the substantive portion of the law can cross over in a way that creates this excellent opportunity. And especially when it's one of these opportunities where the left can really peel off some genuine, like, libertarian and actual conservatives. I'm not talking about people who use the word conservative to paper over the fact that they're, you know, racist. I'm talking about actual, like, policy conservatives. So the Federal Trade Commission has proposed a new rule regarding non-compete clauses. So just a quick primer on that. So a non-compete clause, if you've never experienced one, it is an unnecessarily complicated agreement that you sign with somebody that says that if you stop working for or with that person or that company or whatever, that you will not go out and do the same exact thing, provide the same exact service or product, whatever it is, within a certain time frame and usually distance for those customers, and that you won't go after the customers that they also have, even if you go, you know, to a place where you could start that business. So generally speaking, my experience with non-competes as a lawyer is that most of them are useless anyway. They are pretty hard to enforce. They require lawsuits, which already you're talking about, you know, you're spending money to enforce this thing and what is it actually worth? And they have to be really narrowly tailored to be enforced. The rules on them are pretty strict. So they oftentimes just don't matter at all. This new rule would just get rid of non-compete clauses. It would just toss them out the window. And I personally think that's a really, really good thing. I think it's good for your average American worker, for people who are changing jobs. Sean, you were a recruiter for some time before you got full-time into politics. I imagine this is something that you have some, you know, background in just because of that.
Yeah, totally. It's really interesting because, you know, one reason that the FTC should get rid of non-compete clauses if they can is that it's just a, now it's just a competition of like, who is more aggressive about like saying fuck the non-compete clause. And then like the more aggressive people then have more opportunities than the more cautious people who want to abide by their non-compete clause. Like that's how I saw it play out over and over again.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. Yeah. What I think about, so we haven't talked about this book in a while, but the book, These Truths, this history book. Yeah. You know, the free trade, the so-called free trade movement or philosophy was originally based on the idea that people should be free to trade slaves across international borders, even though it's against federal law.
Right.
And they were like, we need free trade of slaves. So like non-compete clauses can only go one way, right? It, like the corporation always has the power. The worker never has the power.
Right.
And I think it's the same thing. It's like freedom to contract, you know, is often bullshit. Because if we want to be free, we need to be able to work wherever we want. And so,
well, we know that freedom to contract is one of those. It's one of those things that you learn about in law school. And then and I made the note here, Sean, did someone say dormant commerce clause? But it's,
it's, if they did, I'm going to punch them in the stomach.
But you know, freedom to contract is one of those esoteric things you learn about in law school. But it works fine in a vacuum, right? But you have to have two parties of equal footing, equal sophistication, equal power, equal everything, equal motivation. Everything has to be equal for freedom of contract to actually work in a way that is not going to tip the scales in favor of whoever has the, you know, the easiest path, basically. And anybody who's ever played Monopoly and tried to trade properties and shit, at, you know, as the game is going along, knows exactly why. Right. If you're the person going bankrupt and I'm the person with all the money and you want to trade me your properties so that you can keep playing the game, I'm setting the terms.
I'm going to squeeze you as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah, you're quote unquote free to contract with me, but I'm setting the terms. And then I get to say, take it or leave it, sucker. Right. Because if you leave it, your properties are going to go into the pool anyway, and I'm going to just buy them at the auction or whatever. So anyway, that's a lot of Monopoly talk. But the point being that you don't really have this freedom of contract unless you have the ability to collectively bargain or get together with other people. And non-competes are just another way to strip power from people, from regular workers, from non-corporate entities. Rachel?
Yeah, so these are not, so non-competes are not enforceable in California, and that's been the way for quite some time. There's sort of like these kind of loose courtesies in some industries where like there's kind of a quote unquote a handshake deal that you won't poach each other's clients if you check, but you can if you want to. So I'd never seen one until I moved here, and I showed, I don't know if I showed it to Adam or we talked about it, but I worked with somebody who made me sign one, and I looked at it and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I like it was so, and I was like, sure, yeah, I'll sign your fucking non-compete. And I thought it was, I mean, this is a decent person. Like, I don't have anything against this person or whatever. But I was like, do you, for the amount of money that we're talking about, these are tiny consulting gigs, tiny, teeny, tiny consulting gigs. I'm not an investment banker on Wall Street or something that, you know, makes $500,000 a year and wants to change firms and is not allowed to bring their clients with them or however the fuck that works in New York. I have no idea. But here I was like, oh, dollface, are you really going to sue me? Or honestly, like, if you can prove this in a court, are you really going to take me to court and be like, she made $5,000 that I'm entitled to? I was like, good luck, honey. But that really does go back to what Sean was saying, which is that, of course, I'm going to be like that. Naturally, I'm going to be like that. Naturally, I'm going to be like, I'm 52 years old. I'm going to make you beg me for forget. Like, I'm not doing this. This is stupid.
Right.
But there are people who, you know, make, I don't know, let's say you make like mid six figures somewhere and you hate where you work, but it is the kind of industry where your relationships are everything and you want to bring your relationships with you. There are lots and lots and lots of careers like that.
Sure.
And you are kind of stuck at this gig that you hate, or for whatever reason, you just want to, maybe you just want to make more money somewhere else. Maybe there's a job dangling in front of you that's going to, you know, who cares? This is supposed to be like a free market country.
You have kids, a parent gets sick, a spouse
whatever,
gets sick.
Whatever. Yeah. You want mobility. You're entitled to it. So yeah, I think, I've never lived in a state with non-compete. So when I saw one, like I said, I kind of giggled because I know what it's worth. It's like, this isn't really a contract. Contracts are one thing. Contracts are two parties agreeing that they're both going to do something, right? And there's various facets to those things. This is an agreement that makes you swear that you're not going to poach somebody else's clients because they're not really your clients. And that's one of those things that would be very difficult. It'd have to be worth so much money for somebody to actually enforce it. And, you know, how often does that really happen? That's a whole other thing. But it is, I think, it shows that at very least Lina Khan at the FTC and the Biden and Biden's government is trying to really signal a sea change away from sort of concentrated. I mean, they're doing other things too. They're kind of talking at both sides of their mouth a little bit, but like still this is a sign for more worker empowerment. I'll say that.
Yes.
I think
yes.
It's good.
Sean, last word on this.
No. Well, I guess it'll be interesting to see like if there's a bipartisan response. There was a bill that was recently passed with Ken Buck, who's a Republican, a terrible Republican out here, and he co-sponsored a bill actually to void non-disclosure agreements when employees make complaints about sexual harassment. And this dude is an asshole. Like, this guy sucks. But he's one of these kind of, I would still call him a faux populist, but I think this issue hit him personally, just from women in his family is what he said. But, you know, it was a bipartisan bill that's for workers and kind of similar. So it'd be cool if we saw bipartisan support of this idea.
Yeah. Good old fashioned bipartisan support of workers. It'd be like getting in a time machine. How would that be? All right, let's move on to the big one.
And now the big one.
All right, for the big one, you remember last year, or I guess 2 years ago now because it's 2023, remember when Glenn Youngkin was elected and we were like, yeah, it was perfect conditions, don't freak out. And the larger response from political analysts was, this is a complete climate change and everything is different forever. Well, it turns out, as Rachel wrote in the notes.
Can I say the word of the word of the day? The word of the day is bellwether. Like, that's all the media could talk about. It was like, Virginia's a bellwether for what we can expect in the midterms. And
for
like
everything forever.
Yeah. and Biden had been president for 10 minutes.
Right.
And this, like, was
this
Charlie Crist.
Be the response to the Biden presidency.
It wasn't Charlie Crist. That was Florida. Who was the Dem operative?
Oh, Terry McAuliffe.
Yeah, Terry McAuliffe. So this old, this old, like, this.
And he was a former governor of Virginia. Yeah.
Right.
And they have to change terms every 4 years. Like, they can't, they can't serve two consecutive terms. It's really weird.
Right.
So we were, like, digging into it. I didn't mean to, like, jump on you, Ad, but, like, we were kind of digging into it, like...
No, I got to do P.B. Herman. That's good.
Why is everybody freaking out so bad about, like, this one thing? Like, it doesn't mean anything unless you live in Virginia. And he didn't have, like, he just had himself. Like, the Dems still had control of the two sides of the Assembly, the Senate. I forget if they have representatives or what their House equivalent is. So, yes, I do remember. And I do remember talking about it. House of Delegates. Yeah, there we go.
Right, and then we have the link to the story from The Hill about the flipping of the state Senate seat that basically, so the Democrats take control of the state Senate in the same state where apparently, you know, this was going to be the bellwether. Sean?
I'm just trying to think of how I can pull this conversation over to the Biden documents and the 2024 and Trump and the implications of the real top story in my mind.
What's up,
are we setting this up for Glenn Youngkin 24? That was going to be my segue. So said he's a potential.
We're just talking about how, like,
it's the media cycle.
Is still just like, so that's something you can talk about.
Talking about Glenn. Well, I guess I looked up, it looks like in the end of last year, people were like, he won't say he's not running for president. Well,
and here's this comes from. It's this story from The Hill is from the 10th of January. So this came out last week.
We're still hanging out in state politics, buddy. Right. We'll get to the Biden story in the last call.
In the last call for all of our wonderful Patreon subscribers.
So we're saying, is it interesting that the Democrats won? Or
we're
just remarking on this proves Youngkin didn't mean anything.
Right.
Right.
So, and that the frothing the media did for goddamn weeks about it was all they would talk about. Right.
It was too frothy.
And Virginia, we
were like, you can't have that kind of froth. It's too much froth. This is now a Seinfeld episode.
Right.
No, let me give you this story for the context and then Sean. So from The Hill, this is the story. It's about Aaron Rouse, who won the special election for Virginia's 7th state Senate district, which was another Democratic victory in Virginia and was a big deal because it was a special election. And so it was a flip of a seat by a Democrat in Virginia, which is a big deal all the time, anytime you're flipping a seat. But what it means is that they get to keep the majority in the Virginia State Senate, the Democrats do. So the Republicans needed this seat, and, you know, so they're coming off of this alleged sea change and all this stuff. So it's more about when you step back and you look at the bigger picture, it's kind of a reminder for folks to and here's what I wrote in the notes: don't confuse a gusty day for a change in the weather. Right. It doesn't mean that everything has changed forever. Like today, you know, yesterday it was 35 degrees when I was outside with the dogs. Today I go outside. I had my no sleeves on after I got off done exercising, and it was roasty toasty outside.
Right. Right. No. Yeah. This is making a lot of sense. Now it's kind of congealing in my head. I could write a goddamn dissertation about it now.
Yeah. This is very like straight up Sean Diller territory that we're in. Now. This is your backyard. Smarty pants types. Go off, dude. Go.
I will. So yeah, it definitely means that Virginia is still a blue state ever since Obama flipped it. And it's going to continue to be a blue state. And the folks who said that, you know, Glenn Youngkin, a Republican winning, you know, says anything about Virginia, you know, really, I think this proves more than anything that rather than Glenn Youngkin proving what a Republican can do in Virginia, he just proved how he can outperform a generic Republican in Virginia.
That's
like
a good point.
He did extraordinarily well compared to how he should have done. Candidate quality was a huge part of it. Him being a seemingly high quality candidate, and Terry McAuliffe, as I often say, shitting the bed. that quote, I don't think parents should be telling schools what to teach.
Right.
We could have an episode debating the merits of that, but he shit the bed the day that he said that. That was a stupid thing to say. I'm a parent. I'm a Democratic leaning voter, progressive, and I want to have an input on what my schools teach.
Well, and it was the
where's
height.
The calculus?
It was the absolute height of that conversation.
And it was the height of all the COVID backlash stuff, like just the school hating and book burning and book banning.
And I think it shows maybe that the culture wars have kind of swung back, because it was a nice snapshot of like how that school issue was playing with parents.
Correct. I think that's 100%.
So,
and just as a reminder, the national media promised us that if Terry McAuliffe lost, which he did, that definitely meant
it meant Joe Biden was going to lose.
It meant that Joe Biden was going to lose in 2024. This is again right after Joe Biden won in 2020.
Meant the midterms was going to be bad,
and the midterms was going to be bad. It was horrible. Over. It was like everything. The cats were going to fall from the sky. But the
dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Right, exactly. So I love it when I can tell when the whiskey hits Adam. Like I like it to see the moment. I watch it happen.
If you're not always looking for a reason to use a Bill Murray movie quote, then how are you living?
Why
what
are
kind
you?
Life are you living?
So the one-two headline punch that I loved was on the 11th of January. The Semaphore published a story said this special election can make or break Youngkin. And I sent that to Adam. And then I sent a story from the 13th from that said that, you know, I forget who actually won. But anyway, like who actually won the special election in Virginia that said like, oh, the Democrat wins. And I was like, does that mean he's broken now? Does that mean? But we have to read. So that's. And we said that at the time, we were just like, everybody needs to like the thing that still galls me so much. And I'm not I hate the liberal media person. You know, I'm not. And you know, I get so fucking exhausted with that whole narrative, too. It's just more like I hate the cycle. I don't hate the player. I hate the game. Like,
but it's not the liberal media. It's the corporate media. It's the money making media.
Yes.
Let's be very clear. There's Fox News, which is a propaganda arm.
Yeah, that's not news. It's ironically
not. Party.
Yeah.
And then there's the rest of media. I'm not counting like OAN and shit. That obviously that's bullshit. But
they're going
to
go to business.
Your
anyway.
Other larger media outlets are just corporate the New York Times- entities.
The New York Times and the Washington Post are both like Youngkin and McAuliffe and Youngkin. And I was like, none of you live in Virginia. Shut up.
They're small portions of bigger companies that every once in a while, somebody important walks down the hall and says, you're not making enough money, and then walks away. Right.
this is what we have to talk about right now. And it does alienate people from following things that actually are important. And I think like with this particular issue, the issue is that there are a lot of reporters in DC and so they think they know, like a lot of them probably live in Virginia. So it becomes, it's their backyard. It's their story. And they make their story our story. And I was like, boo, we don't give that much of a fuck about what happens in your state really. But we do need to talk about how Senate Majority Leader Louise is one of the greatest Twitter follows on planet Earth. Wait, can you, Adam, go back to our show sheet so I can read her quote. I just love her so much. So Louise Lucas is her name. If you're still on Twitter, I'm not, you should totally follow her. She's the best. This is what she said before the election, right? My birthday is going to be the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. When Roe v. Wade was decided, State Senate President Louise L. Lucas told Roos and other Democrats who were heading out to knock doors on Saturday, quote, you think I'm going to let them turn it back? Hell fucking no. That's what she said in a news story. You should see her Twitter. Her sister, we talked about this, I think, on the pod, that her sister was on like some city council somewhere and cursed out her colleague.
Yeah.
And someone reached out to Senator Lucas for her comment. She's like, who the motherfucking think you taught? Who do you fucking think taught her how to curse? That's what she said. I was like, can we have her? Can she come to Missouri when she's bored? Like, yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah, and go ahead, Sean.
Oh, I was just gonna say, this is obviously also obvious to me anyway. Good for Glenn Youngkin. I'll stitch it together for you.
He gets to rally against the Democrats now.
No, he gets to pass shit with them. He's a Republican governor in a blue state, keeping the.
He can say this is what I will and won't sign.
Right, right.
You guys don't have enough power to override my veto.
Right. Democrats are such straight shooters. They're just going to give him bills that he can sign.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Trying to blow it up. So,
you're right about
it's good
that.
For him.
Because they're going to want to say we're doing work. They're not going to care that he's the one who gets to sign it as long as it's at least decent policy.
But you also need to read your quote, Adam, that I made you write down earlier, because I thought it was so awesome. This is really the nut of the thing. And this is like, this is sort of like one of the seeds of the Heartland Pod. Like we are, we are a tree of many branches. We have many things we like to talk about. But one of them is this. I just think this is the perfect thing. The national media is always so eager to tell us not what happened, but what it means forever. And that is my beef always. Like, you don't have to be so goddamn speculative. You don't have to try to pull the future forward so much all of the goddamn time. There are enough things that happened yesterday to keep you busy that are fucking important.
Right.
Just talk about that only.
And we would learn more if we talked about those things. It's part of why, we're going to talk about the Biden documents. We're going to get into that as part of the last call. But there's a reason why it didn't lead our show. There's a reason why it's not what this show is about, because it is an important story, but it is not that relevant of a story today, right?
And it's super relevant.
It will be
to
relevant.
And it's right. It's super relevant to what we're talking
about. Yeah, it fits into the topic that we're going to talk about. And so it fits there for the last call very neatly. But in and of itself, what is there to really talk about other than to completely speculate as to what it's going to mean in 18 months?
And do we really need one of our real starting shortstop smarty pants types writing an article that says this muddies the criticism against Trump?
Right.
No,
hold that thought.
Cause we're going to get there, but this is still like, I'm waiting for the day. And there are good news outlets that don't take the bait so much, right? There are, they exist.
Yeah. They're
but eventually there's a gravitational pull to stories like this. And they eventually become so, like, we're going to talk about a Guardian story in the last call that is a really good reaction to, like, the whole Biden thing. Because you can tell that whoever wrote it is just like, I fucking hate that I have to write this fucking stupid fucking story about this stupid thing. They may as well have been what they said. But at some point, your editor, when a story like this just keeps sucking up all of the oxygen and the fire is burning so bright and your editor is like, why haven't we said anything about this? And you can't say, because it doesn't matter this much.
Right.
There's nothing else to say.
Because they're just going to say, well, then why is everybody else talking about it?
Well, it doesn't matter that it's not interesting. I went 1,200 words and we're going to lead with it tomorrow and that's it. Shut up. Like, that's what we're going to do. Right. This is going to be the top story in the politics section. I don't care what you're telling me. Yeah. Shut the hell up. And that's why reporters go to Substack, because they're just like, well, now I get to do whatever the hell I want and I'm not going to do 1,200 words on. But eventually they all fall into the same trap of talking because they go on these shows because that pays their bills, right? And I think that's still the responsibility of the larger media organizations, the New York Times, the WAPO, maybe not so much the LA Times anymore, the Wall Street Journal, which I still think is an excellent newspaper. I know that asshole owns it, but it's still a very good newspaper.
It is a good newspaper.
And of course, CNN, right? All of those places should know better by now. They should just not talk about it. You don't have to talk about it. Do you live in Virginia? Yes or no? No. Don't write the story about the governor's race then. Just shut up and talk about something else. And it's so hard to do that, though, because it's just become so fucking seductive.
But it's lazy. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And here we are, and it doesn't matter. That's why we're still talking about it, right? Because we were told for months that this was going to be the most important vote of 2021 or whatever.
It was
going to
predict everything about the midterms. Everything.
And it was so...
It didn't predict shit. It didn't predict what I was going to have for lunch the next day.
Right. And it was so spectacularly off, right? It was so incredibly, ostensibly, utterly, thoroughly, completely wrong. And I'm at least Semaphore had the wherewithal to do the right thing, which is to quote Senator Lucas, because I never understood why more media outlets didn't. I was like, she's his foil. Who cares if he wins or not? He's going to get through her. She's been there forever. Like, she's amazing.
And that's why we're going to talk about the Biden docs in the last call. So if you are a Patreon member, you can get the show over there. And a reminder that if you go to the membership page, if you scroll to the bottom, there is an RSS link. It says, click this RSS link. And if you copy that and put it into your podcast app in the search bar in your podcast app, it will create a podcast of just our premium content just for you as a subscriber. It's very, very handy. It's a wonderful thing. Many people are talking about it. They just told me the other day, sir, we love when we get the premium content in our app directly. And so go and do that. And if you're not a Patreon member, great time to sign up, because we're about to have fun on the last call. And the only way to get it is to go to heartlandpod.com, click the Patreon link and sign up, or go to patreon.com/heartlandpod. At $5 a month or higher, you get the last call and all of our other bonus stuff, including a bonus episode of the Dirt Road Democrat, which is myself and Jess Piper for about 40 minutes or so, just talking about what it means to be a Dirt Road Democrat and our upbringings and religious trauma, all kinds of good stuff. So check it out, heartlandpod.com, click the Patreon link, sign up, get the last call, and we'll be back with a short preview for the non-subscribers.
Last call.
All right, we are here for the last call. We're back, and I'm going to give it one of these just for Rachel.
The good stuff.
It is a good stuff.
Speaking of Bill Murray jokes, the Centauri.
Yeah, I will have to try some of that if it lasts through the when the warmer weather is warmer and I am again invited to the summer.
I have not had this bottle before, but I will tell you that this bottle will not need to last because I will be having this again.
You'll be so it'll be on stock.
Yes,
it'll be stocked.
Good.
Okay, good.
Very good.
Or you'll tell me where I can get some, and I'll just bring some with me.
The sniffer with one single ice cube, and it is.
I like it. I just want to say for everybody who's listening and can't see Adam, I've drunk with Adam several times, and I can tell you from the hue of his cheeks, this is going to be a very good last call.
So I also, to be fair, have been literally just running around for the last like 6 hours.
I saw the flush show up, dude. Yeah. I saw the flush happen. I can always tell. It's like you're one of those people where your expression completely changes.
It does.
Like it just goes from like one Adam phase to there's like this sudden, and it's not subtle.
No.
It's like a bam. It's like this other thing happens and you're like, and now I'm buzzed. You can just totally tell.
Whiskey's the only thing that does that to me. Everything else
does that to me too. It's just one of the whiskey is also like, it is my favorite sipping booze on earth. And I don't have any right now because I can't have it in the house. If I don't want it, I'm just kind of chilling for the winter, just kind of like doing some self care. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think out there that I'm like hurting myself with alcohol, but like whiskey is one of those things that when you have it in the house and you like it as much as I do, you'll just suddenly be like, oh my God, it's Tuesday and I'm hammered and I've just had like three of these.
And it is real sneaky. It's real sneaky.
Yeah. And it does only hit you like that. It just comes on.
It doesn't
on
hit
like,
you like other booze. It hits you in such a different way.
No.
That like, it's very manageable type of buzz.
It's not like tequila.
Right, like tequila, vodka, like, even beer, where like you notice like your movements change, like everything changes. Whereas whiskey, you're just like sitting there and you're just like, oh, I think I'm drunk.
Right. When the fourth hour of Lonesome Dove fires up, you're like, okay, cool. Yeah.
Whiskey's like taking an edible.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. A little
just,
bit. Yeah.
Eventually you're just like, oh, well, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, here I am. Okay. And I'm not driving, and I hope no one's going to take me too seriously for the next hour or two.
Right.
So anyway, let's talk about politics,
Adam.
Which is why we're
in the last call. We don't have to be serious about politics. It's not a serious thing. So the last call, the title of it is The Dog Caught the Car. And that's because the GOP, of course, has taken over the House. They told us they were going to do it. Kevin McCarthy told us for 2 years he was going to fire Nancy Pelosi and take her job. Almost didn't take her job, but he eventually got it. He took her job, and now their actual desire, of course, as we know, is well documented. They've said it themselves. They just want to break the levers. They don't want it to work. They don't want government to government. They would like the government to stop being government and to not do anything. I wrote the word grievance, but now we've already replaced that with our new phrase, Rachel, which was wonderful.
Fuck, I forgot what it was already. Distraction.
Distraction politics. Right.
Distraction politics. Yeah, yeah, that's the whole purpose of it. The whole purpose of it is to make one side go, oh, I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. What, just a bunch of jerks? I'm just so frustrated. I'm just gonna, and that's the liberals. And then on the other side, it just makes people angry. And then they just kill unions.
Right.
That's what's really happening, right?
Take away Social Security, you know, whatever. And then inside all of that, this Russian nesting dolls of investigations on investigations on they're going to investigate the investigations. They're going to investigate the investigators investigating the investigations.
That is a very good way. I like the description of the nesting dolls of investigations. Like, I just see a Matryoshka doll with, like, that'd be a great, like, South Park episode where they just get down to, like, the small one. It's just this little, like, small, tiny, high-pitched voice cursing thing. It's like a
I think the title
demon.
Of the episode would be Investigate Me, Bro.
Jim Jordan is going to have to balance more things.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com, online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.